Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 8:12 a.m. and that is Eastern Summertime, and today is November 4th. And I'm recording early today because I'm going to be in meetings all day and then straight back on the plane home, so I won't be in a position to record the audio later today. And the pound today is down over a cent, so we still have this downtrend, and there's a clear sequence of lower rally highs. And a good part of the reason for that is because the Bank of England is meeting today, but the data that they would like to have about how the furlough program is, or the end of the furlough program is panning out, won't be available for another couple of weeks, which pretty much ties their hands. It's not like that they can go off and raise rates when they don't have the data that they require to make the decision. So that's weighing on the pound. And well, we can also think about that the price got up to about 140 and then it failed. And it's been in this area before. It's the upper side of the base formation. So we're seeing a pause, and certainly there's a sequence of lower rally highs, which is a downtrend, but the size of the decline hasn't been very large because the size of the challenge for the UK economy isn't all that large either. And it's really more a question of what will the Bank of England do about inflation eventually, because they're in a bit of a tight position. When the ECB is saying that they're not going to raise rates until 2023, and the Federal Reserve is saying they're not going to raise rates until they're done with quantitative tightening, well, then we would have to conclude that the Bank of England is going to be very cautious about raising rates because of the upward pressure that that would put on the pound. And instead, they're probably more likely to talk a good game about raising rates. And that's weighing on the pound, which is probably exactly what they would like. And then we can think about how it is trading versus the euro. And against the euro, it's pulling back from the upper side of the base formation as well. So this is, I think, clear and clear evidence and a really good example of how we have competitive currency devaluation. No country wants to have a strong currency, and most particularly the developed markets, which are overburdened with debt, need weaker currencies, which would suggest that if we're thinking about where could we possibly find a stronger currency, well, we have to look at places that are comparatively stronger overall, but that are willing to raise interest rates and have a hope of combating inflation. That's really quite likely to be in the emerging markets. But the dollar so far has been quite resilient. And the strength of Wall Street and corporate profits, as well as the outlook for the Federal Reserve to get through this quantitative tightening without any ill effects, is helping to support the dollar. And this is still a reasonably consistent advance, and it has not sustained a move below the trend mean since June of this year. And as long as that remains the case, then we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. I feel like a torn on this subject. I just don't think that the dollar should be rising, considering the size of the debts that have been taken on. But the reality is that it is going up, and that this is looking like a reasonably consistent trend, which would suggest that the trouble elsewhere is even worse. So then, when we think about what's going on in Asia, well, Australia was in positive territory today on the ASX 200, and the Australian dollar is now pulling back. The big question for some of the commodity producers is what happens to the major commodity exports. And in Australia's case, that has got to be iron ore. And iron ore prices are still weak, and that's almost universally because of the slowdown in production from China. So that's weighing on the value of exports from Australia, It's also weighing on commodity prices, most particularly for the major miners. Companies like BHP and Rio Tinto, it's not only that they're the largest producers of iron ore in the world, but that it represents a very significant proportion of their revenue. So BHP is now distributing below the trend mean and that psychological 2000p level, and that hasn't been able to sustain the breakout. So in order to demonstrate a return to demand dominance, it's going to have to at least sustain a move above the 2000p level. Rio Tinto has been marketing itself as the miner for the renewable energy sector because of its focus on iron ore and aluminium, and both those prices are now pulling back. So that's also contributing to a significant correction underway here, and it continues to make new reaction lows. So we have short-term oversold conditions. We might yet see some rebound, but all of this is evidence of the wider context that the slowdown in Chinese property prices is having for various different sectors. So the Hong Kong property index is still weak looking and was in negative territory in here today. The CSI 300 real estate index was off its lows, but still in negative territory as well in here today and holding the lower side of its range. And we continue to see problems arising because of some of the larger issuers of US dollar denominated debt having significant difficulty in making their payments, and Kaisha was one of those in here today. So China is definitely trying to clamp down on excess leverage within the property sector, and they're instructing the banks to make liquidity available in some cases. But what that really means is that it's going to be state-owned companies or those that are extraordinarily well connected to the old guard are those that will have access to liquidity. And even China Vanke is still trending downwards. And there's no prospect of this company going bust because it's integral to the Communist Party. It's practically an arm of the government, and yet it's also trending lower. So with less property development and less infrastructure development, there'll be less demand for aluminium, there'll be less demand for steel as well. And of course, that also means less demand growth. So while we might see that the overall intensity of use of these commodities within the economy tapers off, there'll still be a lot of demand from China for these commodities. But it's when we think about the outlook for the stocks, it's always about demand growth. So we're definitely in a more difficult environment as regards to China. And the big question then is, are we going to have a big new source of demand coming through? And that's why copper remains the linchpin, because copper prices continue to hold here above the 400 cent level. And they were so far in positive territory in here today. And so far also holding the region of the trend mean. So obviously copper is a big industrial commodity, and it's used in every country in the world. So it's often referred to as Dr. Copper. But there are significant new use cases emerging for copper, so that the demand growth story isn't nearly as heavily impacted by Chinese property as iron ore and aluminium. This is much more about building an electrification infrastructure for transportation around the world, and also for electrifying vast swathes of the emerging markets. And then on top of that, it's building out renewable energy infrastructure. Now, whatever one thinks about the wisdom of doing that. It's largely beside the point because politicians almost universally have signed up for it. And there's tons of copper in a new wind turbine. And this isn't something that's going to slow down. So when we think then also about why are politicians so eager to do this, well, they think that they've come up with a perfect solution, that they have new carbon taxes, and that they'll be able to deploy those carbon taxes into creating jobs and making a legacy for themselves, and therefore that's exactly what they're going to do. And it means that there's going to be a great deal of investment in this type of renewable energy infrastructure. So copper prices are still right in the region of their peaks over the course of the last decade, and this so far continues to look like a consolidation. So while we're seeing some of the industrial metal miners starting to roll over, well, the copper miners are still holding up and steadying in the region of the trend mean, right in line with what we've seen from the copper price. So it really is all to play for here. And in the meantime, it's the technology sector that continues to do well. And the NASDAQ 100 remains in a consistent medium-term advance. And as long as it's holding this breakout, well, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. In the event that it fails, well, then that would be a big trend inconsistency, and it would be certainly a signal that some of the impetus that has driven the market is starting to roll over. When we then think about how people invest in the market, well, there's been a lot of speculative interest in the IPO sector. The problem is that it's difficult to monitor IPOs, and the Renaissance IPO Fund has been one of the most accessible ways of looking at IPOs, and it has rebounded following the sort of shock decline of Moderna in the beginning of October. So we're still in a reasonably benign environment overall. This is much more like an actively managed fund, considering it still holds Uber. And Uber isn't exactly an IPO. I mean, it's certainly a very significant company, but it IPO'd 3 years ago. So to say that it's still an IPO is a bit of a stretch in my book. The share, however, is beginning to rebound from the region of the peaks from back in 2015. And Lyft also came through with more positive earnings this week and is steadying as well from the lower side of its range and the upper side of this base formation. So certainly there is increasing appetite for these kinds of companies that are close to potential profitability if the global economy continues to open up. And it is likely that we're coming to a point where the global economy will gradually come out from behind the mask, and that we're going to move back into a more normal economic environment. The one thing that I think is difficult for central banks right now is that we are not so much looking at mass resignations, but mass retirements. Because young people who are resigning from their jobs, well, they'll go find another one. But people who've decided to retire, and particularly those that took early retirement, well, it's going to take a lot more for them to begin to start looking for work again. And when their portfolios have done so well and their pension pots have increased so much over the course of the last 18 months, well, they're not going to be under pressure to then start looking for work again or accepting working conditions that they might not be happy with. And that suggests that there is a labor mismatch. So that's going to take time to iron out. but it's not like it won't be ironed out. And then we can think about the other big wrinkles in the global economy, like the shipping costs. And the Baltic Dry Index has pulled back now below the trend mean. So this is a really quite acute pullback. And part of the reason is that there's, I think it's not so much that we've had a big new source of ships coming into the market, but that growth might be slowing down. And if growth is slowing down, well, then that's going to delay the speed with which central banks can raise rates. So that's a good part of the reason why stocks remain really quite firm. And that's pretty much universally the case across the developed markets. And Europe in particular is breaking out of a 21-year range because investors are willing to bet that we might start to begin at tapering and raising rates, but that the process is probably going to be a lot lengthier than central banks anticipate because there's just too much uncertainty, and the last thing they want to do is to snuff out the recovery. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.